time now to begin the reading of the Wall Street Journal. For today, it's Thursday, the 17th of April, 2025, and we say hello this morning to Ken.
Hello and welcome. In Wednesday's markets, Dow Industrials sink 700 points. Shares of NVIDIA and AMD drop on new curbs on exports to China. The trade war came for some of the biggest names in the semiconductor industry Wednesday, shaking investor confidence and ending this week's brief calm on stock markets. Shares of NVIDIA, Advanced Micro Devices, and other large chip companies fell initially as investors digested the announcement of new U.S. restrictions on exports to China. Selling accelerated after Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell warned the central bank is limited in how much it can respond to cushion the economy. NVIDIA, the third largest U.S. company by market value, was one of the biggest losers on the S&P 500 index, declining 6.9%, while AMD dropped 7.4%. Losses in technology stocks, which drove the market rally last year, dragged the S&P 500 down 2.2%, the Dow Industrials average down 1.7%, or 700 points, and the NASDAQ Composite down 3.1%. Tech is at the epicenter. The prior winners are taking the most pain, said Robert Hayworth, senior investment strategist at U.S. Bank. It shows there's still nervousness in the market. I hate to call a plus 2% decline in the S&P 500 normal, but that seems to be the type of swings we're getting. NVIDIA warned late Tuesday that it will take a $5.5 billion charge after the U.S. said the company will need a license to export H20 processors to China and other countries. These less powerful AI chips had been designed to comply with American export controls. The U.S. government confirmed the restrictions and said it had put similar curbs on AMD, which announced an $800 million charge from the policy. Trade conflict also is putting a squeeze on the Fed, Powell said in a speech at the Economic Club of Chicago. The central bank must balance dual aims of supporting job creation and keeping price inflation under control. Doing both is becoming harder because tariffs can be both inflationary and recessionary at the same time, potentially forcing the central bank to address one but not the other. The Fed did not provide any assurance that it would support the market by lowering rates, said Keith Lerner, co-chief investment officer at Truist Advisory Services. They are in wait-and-see mode, and companies are in wait-and-see mode, and neither is great for financial markets. Bond and commodity markets reflected uncertainty, too, over which way prices in the economy will move. Traditional inflation hedges rose on Wednesday with gold rising 3.4% to a record and Brent crude oil rising 1.8%. But the 10-year bond yield, which typically rises when inflation expectations climb, fell instead by 0.046 percentage points to 4.276%. Commerce Department data released Wednesday suggested that U.S. consumers front-loaded purchases during March. Retail sales surged 1.4% last month as car buyers rushed to dealerships to get ahead of auto tariffs. The rise was even bigger than expected. In tech, another industry linchpin also rattled investors. ASML, whose huge costly machines are needed to make the most advanced chips, reported much weaker than expected orders and warned about tariff-related disruption. Shares fell 5% in Amsterdam. Trade turmoil is also hitting one of the U.S.'s oldest industries, shipping. Shares of J.B. Hunt Transport Services lost 7.7%, the worst performance in the S&P 500, after the company on Tuesday reported an 8% drop in net earnings in the first quarter. The company blamed slower demand from retailers caused by uncertainty over tariffs. Wall Street's fear gauge, the Jacobi Volatility Index, jumped after falling for three trading days. The dollar, meanwhile, extended its stretch of weakness. Wrangling over tariffs continued, with state leaders in California moving to sue the Trump administration, and President Trump said he would join trade talks with the Japanese delegation. New data showed China was able to sustain its growth rate in the past quarter, helped by a surge of exports by U.S. importers in anticipation of new tariffs. Major indexes in Asia and Europe declined. Duties ensnare GM's bargain SUV. General Motors' least expensive U.S. vehicle, the Chevrolet Trax, has been a hit, racking up praise from car critics while helping GM to its biggest share of the U.S. small vehicle market since 2007. The sporty petite SUV's most appealing feature might be its low $20,000 price tag in the U.S. market, where affordable options have dwindled. That pricing is now at risk because the vehicle is assembled in South Korea, leaving it subject to a new 25% tariff upon entry to the U.S. A significant tariff-related price increase would devastate the Trax among price-sensitive customers, said Matt Bowers, a dealer with two Chevrolet stores in Greater New Orleans. It would kill it, said Bowers, who added that the Trax was his fastest-selling Chevrolet model and usually doesn't last a full week on the lot. It's a reasonably priced compact SUV, and it's very popular, he said. Make it more expensive, and all of that changes. President Trump's recent 90-day pause on reciprocal tariffs doesn't apply to levies on the automotive sector, leaving car manufacturers grappling with higher costs to import vehicles. They also are bracing for tariffs on car parts to kick in early next month, the combination of which could pare billions of dollars from carmakers' bottom lines, analysts estimate. Trump on Monday said he was considering some short-term tariff exemptions for car companies, but didn't go into detail on what those might be or the timing. Nearly 2 weeks since Trump implemented the auto import tariffs, GM continues to import the Trax and other models from Korea with no price increases. The company declined to comment. The roadblock for GM's entry-level model shows the far-reaching effects of Trump's tariff regimen. The company also is subject to import taxes on its biggest moneymakers, pickups such as the Chevy Silverado, which are assembled in Canada and Mexico, in addition to the U.S. Tariff costs could contribute to a 9% drop in North American sales for GM and shave $2 billion from its pre-tax income this year, investment bank UBS said in an April 10th research note. The Trax is the best-selling among four models that GM imports from Korea, which together form the nucleus of the automaker's affordable car strategy and accounted for about 13% of the automaker's U.S. sales last year. GM's three Korean factories also assemble the Chevrolet Trailblazer and a pair of Buicks, the Encore and the Envista. All four of the U.S. sold models start under $30,000, significantly lower than GM's average U.S. selling price of about $50,000. The Trax, which has been on sale in the U.S. since 2015, became a big seller in 2023 when Chevy gave the vehicle a sleeker design with more cargo space and additional features such as wireless phone charging and adaptive cruise control. GM sold about 200,000 Trax last year, making it the top seller in the U.S. compact SUV category tracked by research firm Motor Intelligence, edging out the Subaru Crosstrek and Honda HR-V. Before Trump's recent actions, vehicles and auto parts moved freely between South Korea and the U.S. under a 13-year-old trade agreement that Trump updated during his first term in 2018. Despite its American roots, GM is one of the country's biggest importers of vehicles, and its reliance on Korea sets the carmaker apart from its Detroit rivals, Ford Motor and Jeep parent Stellantis. Trump said in an April 8th social media post that a deal with Korea was probable after he held a call with the country's acting president and said that a team was headed to the U.S. The White House didn't respond to a request for comment on the status of those talks. The automaker with the most to lose from the new tariffs on South Korea is the country's own Hyundai Motor, which, along with its sibling company Kia, shipped nearly 1 million Korea-assembled vehicles into the U.S. in 2024, according to global data. Hyundai and Kia have invested billions to produce more of their U.S. lineups locally, including a new $7.5 billion plant in Georgia. GM's foothold in Korea dates to 2002, when the Detroit automaker took over the bankrupt Daewoo Motor Company and had designs on competing in the growing Korean market. But GM couldn't match Hyundai on its home turf, and the country became an export hub for GM vehicles sold in Europe, India, Australia, and Thailand. In the mid-2010s, GM pulled out of many of those markets in a downsizing strategy by current chief executive Mary Barra. The retreat left GM's Korea operations on the verge of bankruptcy in 2018, but the automaker stayed after securing financing from the country's development bank and concessions from unions. Today, almost all of the Chevys and Buicks rolling off the line in its South Korean factories are sent to the U.S. In recent years, the weakening Korean currency against the U.S. dollar has bolstered the operation. GM executives have said the current version of the Trax is more profitable than its predecessor, but the tariffs could push GM Korea back into the red, Bernstein analyst Daniel Roseca said in an April 7th note to clients. Without relief, he predicted GM will stop shipping from Korea and from China, where it produces a single model for the U.S., the Buick Envision. These vehicles are GM's foothold in the important but low-margin compact SUV segment of the U.S. market, Roseca said in a note. 25% the new tariffs on vehicles imported into the U.S. from Korea. Ackman takes big stake in car rental firm Hertz. Shares of Hertz spiked more than 50% after hedge fund manager Bill Ackman's firm disclosed a significant stake in the rental car company. Ackman-led Pershing Square Capital Management said in a securities filing on Wednesday that it has accrued 12.7 million shares of Hertz stock. That represents about 4.1% of the company's 307.9 million outstanding shares, according to FactSet. Hertz stock closed up 56.44% at $5.71 a share. Pershing Square is known for taking activist positions in companies. The investment firm and Hertz didn't respond to requests for comment. Hertz became one of the first MAME stocks after COVID-19 pushed it into bankruptcy in 2020, with individual investors betting that the company would rebound. Their faith was rewarded when Hertz staged a dramatic comeback and returned about $8 a share to stockholders in its exit from Chapter 11. After emerging under a new management team, Hertz made a big bet on electric and alternative fuel vehicles. The Estero, Florida-based company ordered 100,000 Teslas. Famed NFL quarterback Tom Brady appeared in TV ads to tell viewers that environmentally conscious Hertz was leading the way with its electric fleet. But customers weren't as eager to rent them as Hertz thought they would be. Hertz shares have steadily declined since it made its push into EVs, which drove up its operating costs. The company ended up shaking up its management team yet again and pivoting to unwind its EV investment and sell many of those vehicles, incurring depreciation costs along the way. Last year, Hertz sold a large portion of its EV fleet to cut operating costs, including expenses associated with remote charging and better aligned with customer demand. Hertz also took a nearly $200 million write-down on EVs. The misstep has hampered Hertz's earnings, and the company has reported net losses for the past couple of years while its debt load has increased. The company has also been fighting a $272 million legal judgment stemming from a dispute with investors who owned its bonds at the time of its bankruptcy based on a claim that the company should have paid them interest while it was in Chapter 11, since the shareholders ended up getting paid. Hertz is appealing the judgment to the Supreme Court. While the decline of the COVID-19 pandemic and the resumption of global travel rendered Hertz solvent despite the high stakes of this dispute, the nearly $272 million at issue here could make the difference between solvency and insolvency in many cases, Hertz lawyers wrote in an April 4th petition to the High Court. Several months ago, the company brought on Ducera Partners as a financial advisor and Davis Polk as legal counsel to assist with advising on options for handling the legal judgment. Bloomberg first reported the advisor's engagement. Even as Hertz's stock soared Wednesday following the Ackman news, the company's debt securities have been showing signs of financial strain, with some of its junior bonds still trading around 50 or 60 cents on the dollar. Nearly half of Hertz's stock float is sold short. Google faces UK antitrust suit over ad search. Google is facing a potential £5 billion, or $6.62 billion, collective action lawsuit in the UK that claims it abused its dominance and overcharged companies for search advertising services. The case filed Wednesday by British competition law academic Orr Book, who is represented by the law firm Gurdie & Partners, argues that Alphabet-owned Google abused its dominant position in the digital economy to exclude competitors from the general search and search advertising markets, allowing it to charge higher prices for search ads. A Google spokesperson said the case was speculative and opportunistic. "We will argue against it vigorously," the spokesperson said, adding that consumers and advertisers turn to the company because it is helpful. The action is being taken on behalf of UK organizations that published Google ads from January 2011 until when the claim was filed. Google is one of the most powerful companies in the world. However, through a range of deliberate and exclusionary practices, it has sought to eliminate its rivals and dominate the search advertising market, ultimately overcharging UK advertisers by billions of pounds, Damien Gurdain, founder of Gurdain Partners, said. The claim that Google's business terms, such as requiring device manufacturers to set its own search and Chrome browser apps as defaults on Android devices, and a revenue-sharing deal with Apple over how its Safari browser showcases Google search, breach competition law. It also claims that Google gives its own advertising offering, Search Ads 360, better functionality with its own products compared to rivals. It argues that advertisers who used Google services could be owed roughly £5 billion in damages. Google has for years fielded complaints from rivals that claim it uses existing dominance in the digital economy to keep competitors at bay. The UK's Competition and Markets Authority said in September that Google might be stifling competition by favoring its own ad tech services that advertisers and publishers use to bid for and sell advertising space. The European Commission also is in advanced stages of an investigation into Google's ad tech business. Heineken's organic revenue rises, sending its shares higher by 5%. Heineken on Wednesday reported organic revenue growth that beat market expectations and confirmed its full-year guidance, but warned of a volatile consumer and geopolitical backdrop amid tariff uncertainty. The Dutch brewer said recent tariff adjustments and potential increases heighten uncertainty and might weigh on consumers. In the first quarter, before President Trump unveiled the bulk of his sweeping tariff plans, higher sales volumes of Heineken's premium beer brands and price increases helped it post an organic revenue increase that defied expectations of a decline. The company, which owns brands such as Amstel and Birra Moretti, in addition to its namesake brand, reported a 0.9% rise in organic net revenue for the first quarter compared with the year earlier period. This beat analysts' expectations of a 0.6% decrease, according to a company-compiled consensus. The result was driven by growth in the Africa and Middle East and the Asia-Pacific markets, which offset declines in the Americas and Europe. Shares of Heineken climbed 5% in European trading. Similar to other brewers, Heineken produces more than 95% of its products locally, leaving it less exposed to the direct effects of a trade war. Nevertheless, brewers could still suffer indirect effects, such as a weakening of consumer sentiment and higher input costs. Canned beer faces higher costs in the U.S. as part of duties the Trump administration imposed on steel and aluminum products, and this poses a risk to the European beer industry, trade organization Brewers of Europe previously said. The U.S. is European brewers' second most important export market for beer in both value and volume, according to Brewers of Europe. As the year progresses, we will be navigating a macroeconomic environment increasingly in flux, requiring us to stay agile and proactively adapt to changing circumstances, Heineken Chief Executive Dolf van der Brink said. The company continues to expect adjusted operating profit, which strips out exceptional and other one-time items, to grow organically between 4% and 8% in 2025. The target remains in line with analysts' 5.8% forecast, according to a company-compiled consensus. Heineken's total revenue for the first quarter was 7.78 billion euros, the equivalent of $8.78 billion, down from 8.18 billion euros a year earlier, the company said. Beer volume fell 2.1% year over year, compared with market expectations of a 2.9% drop. The decline was driven by a high comparison base and other technical factors, such as fewer business days and the timing of Easter and Vietnam's Tet celebration, as previously flagged by the company. U.S. shoppers flock to China shopping app. The popularity of a Chinese e-commerce app has surged in the U.S., driven by a spate of viral TikTok videos amid a trade war between the world's two largest economies. DHgate, a Beijing-based online platform for cross-border commerce, became the second most popular app on Apple's App Store in the U.S. on Wednesday. The surge in DHgate's popularity was driven by viral TikTok videos posted by Chinese influencers purportedly explaining the inner workings of global supply chains. DHgate allows global buyers to buy directly from Chinese factories used by popular Western brands, but without the branding and at a much lower price. China exposes luxury brands was a trending topic on TikTok on Wednesday, as Chinese users posted short videos showing how luxury Western brands, from handbags to yoga pants, were actually being made in Chinese factories. In one video, a TikToker claimed unbranded yoga pants could be bought for as little as $15, made in the same factories with the same quality as pants from a famous Western brand that could cost over $100 when sold in the U.S. These pants, handbags, or other goods bought directly from Chinese factories would still be dramatically cheaper than from a U.S. seller, even after hefty U.S. tariffs are paid, these TikTokers claim. According to Sensor Tower, a company that analyzes app performance, DHgate broke into the top 100 most popular free downloaded apps in Apple's App Store in the U.S. on April 13th, when it ranked 8th. Chinese online shopping apps have seen their popularity grow after China said last Friday that it would raise its tariffs on U.S. goods to 125% as a retaliation to U.S. President Trump's decision to impose tariffs up to 145% on Chinese goods. Aluminum cost increases to hit results at Alcoa. The Trump administration's tariff actions on imports of aluminum will likely result in a $100 million annual headwind for Alcoa, Chief Executive William Oplinger said. During the first quarter, the Pittsburgh aluminum producer said it incurred about $20 million in costs stemming from tariffs, which went into effect last month. This charge is expected to increase to $90 million in the current quarter. Higher prices for domestically produced aluminum are partially offsetting these costs, Oplinger said Wednesday. However, he added that it would be impractical to increase production in the U.S. in the short term, which has been one of the administration's main goals in raising tariffs. As it stands, the U.S. imports more than 4 million metric tons of aluminum annually, the majority of which comes from Canada. The U.S. would have to build at least 5 new smelters to close its trade deficit for the metal, a feat that would likely take up to a decade, cost billions of dollars, and require additional energy production equivalent to that of 7 nuclear reactors, Oplinger said. Until additional smelting capacity is built in the U.S., the most efficient aluminum supply chain is Canadian aluminum flowing into the U.S., he said, adding that Alcoa won't build new capacity on the basis of tariffs. Despite tariff and economic uncertainty, Alcoa swung to a profit and Despite tariff and economic uncertainty, Alcoa swung to a profit and logged higher revenue in the recent quarter, buoyed by higher prices and a pull forward in demand. The company also backed its outlook for the remainder of the year. In the first quarter, Alcoa notched a profit of $548 million, or $2.07 a share, compared with a loss of $252 million, or $1.41 a share, a year earlier. Revenue jumped 30% to $3.37 billion, but missed the $3.42 billion that analysts modeled. Abbott braces for tariffs as profits posts increase. Abbott Labs boosted its earnings in the first quarter and hinted that its full-year guidance might have gotten a lift were it not for looming cost increases from the recent tariff war. Chief Executive Robert Ford said Wednesday that before President Trump kicked off his tariff campaign, management considered raising its 2025 earnings outlook given the momentum they were seeing in the healthcare product makers' base business. But tariffs are here, Ford told analysts on the call, so we felt reaffirming our guidance is already, I think, a pretty strong statement. Shares advanced 2.8% to $129.70 in Wednesday's trading. Abbott estimates that the tariff swirling between the U.S. and its trading partners could impact the company to the tune of a few hundred million dollars in 2025, largely in the back half of the year, Ford said. The CEO said Abbott is building 2 new manufacturing and R&D facilities in Texas and Illinois that are on track to go live by the end of the year and represent a $500 million investment in U.S. production. Ford also expects there could be some mitigating factors offsetting that tariff cost, including a weakening U.S. dollar and other foreign exchange shifts. I can tell you there's not a lot of R&D slowing down or selling, general, and administrative expenses slowing down in those mitigation plans, he said. The comments came after Abbott reported strong demand for its nutritional products and medical devices in the first quarter, which offset weakness in other segments. The Abbott Park, Illinois-based company posted a profit of $1.33 billion, or 76 cents a share, compared with the $1.23 billion, or 70 cents a share, in the same period a year earlier. Stripping out one-time items, adjusted earnings were $1.09 a share, 2 cents above the consensus estimate of analysts polled by FactSet. Revenue rose 4% to $10.36 billion, missing analyst forecasts for $10.41 billion, according to FactSet. The maker of Pedialyte said pediatric nutrition sales were up 3.2%, while adult nutrition revenue rose 4.4%, citing strong growth for its Glucerna brand and Ensure lines of shakes and beverages. Worldwide medical device sales were up almost 10%, led by diabetes care, structural heart, heart failure, and electrophysiology categories. Sales in its global diagnostics division were down 7.2%, but up slightly when excluding revenue from COVID-19 testing products. Core laboratory diagnostic sales declined about 2.3%, which Abbott attributed to volume-based procurement programs in China that are meant to drive down the costs of drug prices and medical devices. "We're really faced with a price hit and no volume offset," Ford said Wednesday of China's procurement programs. He acknowledged that results were somewhat disappointing in the diagnostics business and that there are improvements to be made, particularly in China. Abbott projects adjusted earnings of $1.23 to $1.27 a share for the current quarter. It is maintaining guidance for organic sales to be up 7.5% to 8.5% this year, and for adjusted earnings to hit $5.05 to $5.25 a share. J.B. Hunt profit falls as weak demand for freight persists. Trucker is first major operator to post results since Trump began tariff rollout. J.B. Hunt Transport Services logged lower profit and revenue in the first quarter as the sector continued to struggle with weak demand and excess capacity. The Lowell, Arkansas Trucking and Logistics Company said its net earnings fell nearly 8% in the 3 months ended March 31st to $117.7 million, or $1.17 a share, from $127.5 million, or $1.22 a share, a year earlier. Analysts surveyed by FactSet expected $1.15 a share. Revenue edged 0.8% lower to $2.92 billion, excuse me, just ahead of the $2.9 billion that analysts modeled. "It has been a difficult environment for the past few years," Chief Executive Shelley Simpson said during a call with analysts Tuesday. "While the timing of the market inflection still remains uncertain, we will exit from a position of strength." Simpson said the company is looking for ways to reduce and eliminate costs to improve its margins. J.B. Hunt said it has reduced its payroll costs by more than $200 million over the past 2 years, including through attrition. J.B. Hunt's results marked the first major earnings report for a freight operator since President Trump began rolling out aggressive new tariffs. "The U.S. freight market over the past 2 years has been marked by weak pricing and what carriers say is an oversupply of trucks. The Cass Freight Index, a closely watched measure of monthly freight activity, has declined annually for 26 straight months, with March recording a 5.3% drop compared with the same month last year. Import volumes picked up at the beginning of this year as companies rushed in inventory to get ahead of the expected tariffs, but activity has more recently slowed as retailers pare new orders and wait to see what happens with duties. The National Retail Federation's Global Port Tracker has projected that 19 consecutive months of year-over-year growth in the U.S. import volumes would end in May, dropping sharply to 1.66 million containers, down 20.5% from 2024. Excuse me. J.B. Hunt attributed its quarterly drop in revenue to a 5% decrease in average truck count in its dedicated contract services unit, as well as 15% fewer stops in its final mile services agreement. Additionally, its integrated capacity solutions arm, which matches freight loads to trucks, notched 13% fewer total loads, and its truckload segment posted lower year-over-year revenue per load. The company's intermodal business The combined truck-rail business that provides nearly half of its overall revenue recorded revenue of $1.47 billion, up 5% from a year earlier as load volume increased. J.B. Hunt said its intermodal operation handled the highest first-quarter volume in the company's history. That increase tracks a flood of container imports to start the year at the neighboring ports of Los Angeles and Long Beach, the main ocean gateway for imports from Asia. Spencer Fraser, the company's executive vice president of sales and marketing, said customer demand in the quarter was in line with normal seasonality as companies pulled forward inventory ahead of the Lunar New Year, when factories across Asia closed for several weeks. Fraser said J.B. Hunt doesn't yet have a projection for how tariffs will impact the market. Our customers continue to plan for multiple what-if scenarios, but most of them are waiting for the dust to settle to determine how tariffs might influence and change their short- and long-term business strategies, Fraser said. Shares fell nearly 8% to $124.73 on Wednesday. The tactics Elon Musk uses to manage his legion of babies and their mothers. Musk juggles children and harem drama along with his companies and advising Trump. Ashley St. Clair wanted to prove that Elon Musk was the father of her newborn baby. But to ask the billionaire to take a paternity test, the right-wing social media influencer had to go through Musk's longtime fixer, Jared Bercall. "I don't want my son to feel like he's a secret," St. Clair told Bercall in a two-hour phone call in December. Bercall offered St. Clair some advice. "His boss was a very big-hearted, kind, and generous person," he said. But Musk had a different side. When a mother of his child goes the legal route in these discussions, that always, always leads to a worse outcome for that woman than what it would have been otherwise, Bercall told the 26-year-old. Plus, he said, Musk wasn't sure the child was his. Excuse me. It wasn't the first such conversation for Bercall. His public job is running Musk's family office, and he recently helped organize Musk's more than $250 million push in support of Donald Trump's election. Behind the scenes, Bercall also manages the financial and privacy deals Musk wants for the women raising the world's richest man's babies. Musk has had at least 14 children with four women, including pop musician Grimes and Siobhan Zillis, an executive at his brain computer company, Neuralink. Multiple sources close to the tech entrepreneur said they believe the true number of Musk's children is much higher. Musk offered St. Clair $15 million and $100,000 a month in support in exchange for her silence about the child, whom they named Romulus. Similar agreements had been negotiated with other mothers of Musk's children, Bercall told St. Clair. The fight with St. Clair over the deal for their baby has been going on as Musk has assumed one of the most influential roles in the U.S. government. As a top advisor to President Trump, he has been slashing staff and billions of dollars from the federal government as the head of the Department of Government Efficiency, with massive benefit programs such as Social Security, Medicaid, and Medicare in the crosshairs. Musk's baby-making project is relevant to his ambitions for NASA, which he wants to move faster to go to Mars. He said on X that making people multiplanetary is critical to ensuring the long-term survival of humanity and all life as we know it. In Musk's dark view of the world, civilization is under threat because of a declining population. He is driven to correct the historic moment by helping seed the Earth with more human beings of high intelligence, according to people familiar with the matter. The main objective of SpaceX is to build a rocket ship capable of getting to Mars, and his other companies, including Tesla, helped finance the plan. Musk refers to his offspring as a legion, a reference to the ancient military units that could contain thousands of soldiers and were key to extending the reach of the Roman Empire. During St. Clair's pregnancy, Musk suggested that they bring in other women to have even more of their children faster. To reach legion level before the apocalypse, he said to St. Clair in a text message viewed by the Wall Street Journal, we will need to use surrogates. He has recruited potential mothers on his social media platform X, according to some of the people. Musk has used his wealth to buy the silence of some women who have had his kids, according to St. Clair, as well as other people, text messages and documents reviewed by the journal. Non-disclosure clauses are part of some of the payment agreements. If the mothers push back or seek outside counsel, Musk's advisors, including Bricall, have threatened financial retribution, according to the documents and people. Bricall described Musk's expectations to St. Clair. Privacy and confidentiality is the top of the list in every aspect of his life. Every aspect in his entire world is set up to be like a meritocracy. Benefits flow, he said, when people do good work. During the call with Bricall, St. Clair told him she had received outreach from a woman Musk had invited to have his baby. She said she was being caught up in Musk's harem drama. The details of Musk's baby mission are only now starting to spill into the public. Grimes begged Musk in February for help on X when one of their children was having a medical crisis because Musk wouldn't engage with her. Earlier that month, after their 4-year-old son, also called X, had been on television on his father's shoulders as he talked about government cuts in the Oval Office, Grimes posted that he should not be in public like this. A person familiar with Musk's thinking on the agreements with the mothers of his children said that Musk believes it is better to resolve these matters behind closed doors for the safety and security of the child. Make new humans. Musk has warned that civilization is going to crumble if people don't start having more children, a view popularized as pronatalism in right-wing circles. The movement is composed of people concerned about the birth rate and eager to implement policy and cultural solutions to the problem. Martin Varsavsky, a friend of Musk's who founded a large chain of in vitro fertilization clinics in the U.S., said he has spoken with Musk about the risks of falling birth rates. Without babies, there's no future. Every problem becomes secondary to the problem of not having people on the planet, said Varsavsky. Elon believes that a country is not the geography, a country is the people. Speaking to an audience at an investment conference in Saudi Arabia last year, Musk laid out the urgency of the matter. I think for most countries, they should view the birth rate as the single biggest problem they need to solve. If you don't make new humans, there's no humanity, and all the policies in the world don't matter, Musk told the crowd over a live video. When the interviewer joked that Musk was doing his part to address the issue, the billionaire agreed. Yes, I am. I mean, you know, you've got to walk the talk. So I do have a lot of kids, and I encourage others to have lots of kids. Separately, Musk has said he is concerned about what he called third world countries having higher birth rates than the U.S. and Europe, a person familiar with the conversation said. One of the most important ways to change these dynamics, he has repeatedly told people close to him, is for educated people to have more children. In 2023, he had a meeting in Austin where people he described as Japanese officials asked him to be a sperm donor for a high-profile woman, according to a text message reviewed by the journal. They want me to be a sperm donor. No romance or anything, just sperm, he texted St. Clair. Musk later told her he gave his sperm to the person who asked for it without naming her. Special status. Vivian Wilson, one of Musk's older children from his first wife, Justine Musk, said recently to Teen Vogue that she doesn't know how many half-siblings she has. Musk is now estranged from Vivian because he refuses to accept her identity as transgender. Justine Musk had 6 children with Musk, but one child died as a baby. Grimes, whose legal name is Claire Bosher, has 3 young children with Musk. She and Musk went through a custody battle but settled in August. Musk offered his sperm to Zillis, and the two have 4 young children together. Zillis is viewed as a steadying force in Musk's life and is the most prominent of Musk's mothers. He really wants smart people to have kids, so he encouraged me to this, Zillis told Musk's biographer Walter Isaacson. The Yale University graduate was a founding member of the investment team at Bloomberg Beta and made Forbes 30 Under 30 venture capital list in 2015. Zillis also was a board member at OpenAI and worked at Tesla earlier in her career. 2 people close to Musk described her as having special status, meaning Musk chooses to spend time at her home in Austin as well as bringing her to high-profile public events. In January, Zillis attended a black tie pre-inauguration dinner with Musk. Weeks later, she alongside Musk for a meeting with India's Prime Minister Narendra Modi and 2 of their children and another of Musk's in tow. While Musk posts sometimes dozens of times a day on X about right-wing politics or his companies, among other things on his mind, he often interacts with lesser-known users. He replies to them and sometimes interacts through direct messages, some of whom he eventually solicits to have his babies, according to people who have viewed the messages. Cryptocurrency influencer Tiffany Fong was covering disgraced crypto tycoon Sam Bankman-Fried's downfall when Musk started liking and replying to her posts. Musk's interactions ramped up as Fong posted more political content in support of Trump, and Musk followed her last summer. That sort of attention from Musk on X, where he has 219 million followers, sent droves of followers to Fong, which was a financial boon. More engagement meant more earnings for her as part of a revenue-sharing program for creators on X. During the height of her interactions with the billionaire owner, Fong earned $21,000 on the platform in a 2-week period in November, according to a screenshot she posted. That was about when Musk sent her a direct message asking if she was interested in having his child, according to people familiar with the matter. The two had never met in person. Fong didn't move forward with Musk because she pictured having children in a more traditional nuclear family, but confided to a few friends about the approach, including St. Clair, whom she knew as another conservative figure, and how she worried that turning him down could hurt her earnings. Once Musk learned that Fong disclosed the request to others, he chided her for not using discretion, according to the people, and unfollowed her. That contributed to a fall in her engagement and her earnings declined. St. Clair and Musk had met earlier in spring 2023 after Musk began interacting with the influencer's post on X and followed her. Soon after, they were exchanging direct messages before Musk invited her to visit X's San Francisco office, and the relationship turned romantic. Musk invited St. Clair, who had been working at a conservative media company that owns the Babylon Bee, onto his private plane for a trip to Rhode Island where he was visiting one of his sons at college. The first time they had sex, Musk joked that they should pick a name for their future child. He frequently talked to her about having children, she said. It was months later, on a New Year's trip to St. Bart's, that she told him that she was ovulating. He asked her, "What are we waiting for?" And the two conceived their son on that trip, St. Clair said. Being in his circle brought with it access to a constant stream of texts, particularly about his growing involvement in Trump's election. Before Musk publicly supported Trump, he texted her, "I can't be president, but I can help Trump defeat Biden, and I will." In one text before Trump picked a running mate, viewed by the Journal, Musk asked St. Clair what she thought about Tulsi Gabbard as a vice presidential candidate, saying that in interviews she says the right anti-establishment words. While Musk was in Pennsylvania canvassing for Trump before the election, Musk sent a series of texts about the urgency of winning the state to St. Clair. In all of history, there has never been a competitive army composed of women. Not even once, he wrote. Men are made for war. Real men, anyway. He followed up with, I am in full war mode, going to the front lines today. Must win PA. Protecting Elon. In the December phone call, Bercall told St. Clair his job was to protect Elon. He told her that he has been happily married to the same woman, but he has been very involved in family law courts, very extensively, through his work for Musk. I feel like I've been through, like, three divorces, he said. Bercall worked in finance before becoming one of the top consigliers in Musk's orbit. Musk recruited him from Morgan Stanley's private wealth management group, where he was part of a small team managing the businessman's money. The two men couldn't be more different on the surface. Bercall is a practicing Mormon with a large family who works hard to keep a low profile. Bercall's responsibilities are wide-ranging, from disbursing funds for Musk's super PAC to assembling the team that helped Musk take Twitter private. His role as intermediary between Musk and some of the mothers happens in the background. Musk often has Bercall step in to handle negotiations with the women over arrangements for the pregnancy and financial support after. The arrangements play out in similar ways for the different women, according to a document and people familiar with the matter. Bercall was involved in acquiring the property for a compound in Austin, where Musk imagined the women and his growing number of babies would all live among multiple residences, according to a person familiar with the matter. He is involved in other property deals across Musk's different businesses. Zillis lives in the gated community with their children, and Musk comes and goes. Musk also attempted to get Grimes to move to the compound, but she refused. Similarly, he tried to get St. Clair to spend some time in Austin with our kid Legion, according to a text he sent her. Bercall said on the December call with St. Clair, the NDAs are necessary. We have been through way too many issues where to not sign some agreement associated with handing over $15+ million is absolutely insane and irresponsible, and because we have dealt with some very unstable, mentally unstable people that all of a sudden misremember things, he said. He added that his boss cannot allow people to just go and share his life information. He is the biggest lightning rod on the entire planet. When Bercall told St. Clair that other mothers signed similar secrecy agreements, she observed that they didn't seem happy. Zillis, Bercall said, goes in and out of finding contentment, but Grimes wasn't ever going to find true happiness. Knock you up again. Grimes claimed on X that her court battle with Musk over custody of their three children bankrupted her. Musk had sued Grimes in 2023 in Texas to establish the parent-child relationship, and Grimes countersued in California for primary physical custody. She alleged that Musk kept one of their children from her for 5 months, and that, during court proceedings, Musk's team dug up parts of her past to portray her as a bad mother. The two had dated in 2018 before having kids. Bercall featured prominently in negotiations in Musk's fight with Grimes. He also was in the Austin courtroom during their case, which has been resolved and is now sealed. Grimes and Musk alternate weeks with the children, according to people familiar with the matter. Porsche Air wants a tunnel, but the neighbors don't dig it. Plan for underground cave to tycoon's villa is stoking a class war in ritzy Alpine town. For the 1920s literary celebrity Stefan Zweig, Part of the charm of his romantic and impractical Salzburg home was that it sat on an alpine foothill, inaccessible by car. For automotive tycoon Wolfgang Porsche, who bought the 17th-century villa for roughly $9 million in 2020, the lack of easy access is an engineering problem with an expensive solution. A roughly 1,600-foot private tunnel through the hill as to a cavernous underground garage. The question is whether Salzburg, the picture-perfect Austrian city best known as the home of Mozart and the Sound of Music, will give Porsche the green light. The extravagant car cave has become the talk of the town, reigniting debate over whether a municipality famous for its black tie opera festival has one rule for the rich and another for the rest. And that's it for today's edition of the Wall Street Journal. I'm Ken, your volunteer reader here at the Talking Information Center, and I thank you for listening.
Wow, that must story.